Okay, welcome everybody. I'm Jackie Garden. This is Coach the Coach Practicum 4. I am with the October cohort, and this is Group D. And this is our first class, and it is June 13th, 2016. That's the hardest part of my job. The header. Believe it or not, to remember all of that. I used to write it all out. And now I'm like, I think I got this after 7 years. Just so I wouldn't forget anything. Well, hi, everybody. It's such an honor to be here with all of you. I'm super excited to be facilitating Coach the Coach Practicum 4. Just so you know, we have not always had Coach the Coach Practicum 4. We included it in the curriculum, about a year and a half ago. And I'm so glad that Abigail did, because it's really an opportunity for you guys to really put it all together, if you will, because this is what it's going to be like when you're out there coaching in the real world. You're going to have to kind of figure out where your client is in the change cycle and let that inform you about what tools to use and use your intuition and use your mindset along with your skill set to coach your client. So I'm so glad that we have this practicum class so you guys have that opportunity to do that. So I just want to, before we move on, I want to give a shout-out to Linda. Linda just joined us. Hi, Linda. It's Jackie. Welcome to class.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome aboard. We just started, so you haven't really missed anything. Before we begin, I just want to check in with all of you and see if you have any questions or comments about the tools, about the skills, about coaching in general, or if you want to share your experience with coaching as you're out there practicing. Anybody? Everything's going along.
Question.
Yeah, who's this?
This is Rachel. So I'm kind of feeling like, I mean, I've coached a few people outside of the class and whatnot, so I feel like I'm kind of getting, you know, the idea of it, but mm-hmm. I'm also, like, feeling very much like in square two and square three, like I'm mm-hmm. working on putting things together and putting myself out there, but I'm also feeling very compelled to still dream and scheme, and
mm-hmm.
like, I guess I'm just checking in to see, maybe other people feel like that, maybe not, but I'm just, it's normal to have whatever normal is, one foot in each square as I'm still figuring this out.
Yeah, so do you have a question around that?
I guess more of an observation, just kind of realizing that it's a process, and I mean, it's the things that everybody's been saying all along, but it's feeling more real as we're getting close to the end of our course and realizing that we're almost done, and I'm like, I guess I'm just
sharing. So is there anything
where I'm at?
Yeah, and I appreciate that, and I think that's true. I think you can be in different squares for the different parts of your life. So you may find that in regards to coaching, Rachel, you see yourself maybe being in, like, on the precipice. You're in square two or maybe on the precipice of square three. And then you may find in your friend and or your friendship life or your personal life that you're in maybe square four. And, you know, your financial life, you may be in square one. So, you know, I think that, you know, depending on the aspect of your life, you may be in different squares. And I also think, and I don't know if this feels true for you, but I also sometimes get the feeling, based on my experience teaching, that people think that or have this desire to kind of get to square four. They think like that's the end goal. And I don't know if that really resonates for you. Just if that does resonate for you, just notice if you're having a judgment about what square you're in. I go through all the squares all the time. You know, right now I'm totally in square one with my older children who've moved back home temporarily. And that's totally thrown me into square one. Where as a year ago, I was kind of floating along in kind of square four with them. So, you know, it just really depends. And square two is a super fun place to be, by the way, because that's kind of when you're kind of dreaming and scheming about maybe what you want for your practice or who your ideal clients are, what your ideal day may look like, or what you want, how you want to express your particular, your unique gifts, or, you know, or treasures, or your innate talents. So that's super fun. And square three is exactly what the mantra says. It's hard as hell, and that's okay. Right. So I appreciate you sharing. I was just curious if you had like a question about that.
I thought I did, but then as I was talking, I guess I realized I was just kind of sharing.
Yeah, and I totally, you know, you probably don't need to hear this. I think you answered your own question. Totally normal, as long as you don't have any judgments about where you are in regards to the change cycle. But totally normal to kind of move in and out of those squares, depending on what's going on in your life.
Okay, cool.
And I don't know if I've ever really completely gotten to square four or been there for very long. I just don't think of it in that. I don't think of my life in that way anymore. Mm-hmm. All right. Anybody else have any questions or comments? Or...
I do. This is Kathy. It's sort of to Kathy. What Rachel was talking about. It's like, I know this has probably been discussed over and over again, but I guess it's trying to understand the difference between self-sabotaging and holding yourself back or really not being ready for the next step.
Mm. So do you have an example that you can offer me? I always find that example than the theoretical. So do you feel like you might be self-sabotaging or do you?
I don't know. Like I'm sort of setting up, you know, but I'm a real slow. I'm slow with the process. Like at some point of this training, it felt like I was behind in the, not behind in a bad way, but behind where, you know, let's go, let's get set up, go ahead, just start, just go. And I'm always just a little bit, a few weeks behind that, which for me is okay. But I don't know if I'm self-sabotaging because I, you know, that you don't need a website, you don't need this, you don't need that. And I feel like, well, how exactly do you expose yourself if those aren't necessary, you know, tools to get you kind of launched?
Mm-hmm.
So I find myself holding back from doing that. I am not at all visible online. I never have been because up to this point in my life, it wasn't necessary for me. So I would need to get started in that avenue where I start addressing the way that the world is viewed at this point and getting yourself out there. And I kind of keep holding back setting up an appointment to get going because I don't know. Am I self-sabotaging or am I just not ready? And I don't know if there's even an answer or if other people find themselves in that same question mark in their head or if it's just me.
Yeah, I have a couple of responses to that. I mean, I think that you first need to kind of pay attention and acknowledge and honor, you know, your COVID index. So I don't know if are you a high fact finder, Kathy?
Oh, my results were that I was in transition.
Okay. All right. So
not a high fact.
Yeah. So some of us are high fact finders. And so people who score high on fact finding, probably, if you compare yourself to quick starts, you might think that you're behind, right? And, you know, fact finders, as you know, like to have all their ducks in a row, although there's kind of a slippery slope there, right, where you can kind of get into you know, analysis paralysis, so to speak, and get so caught up or so entangled in having everything in place and having it all perfectly done that you kind of don't go out there and make yourself visible, as you say. So that's number one. And I do, and just to your second point about visibility, I think that you can answer your own question, because I don't think that you need to really be, have an online visibility in order to be visible, that there are other ways that you can connect with people. Do I think if you want to have an online business and you're coaching over the phone or through, you know, Skype, you know, at some point I do think it's important to have an online presence. But at this stage of the game, I don't think it's, you know, a critical ingredient in getting started. I didn't have a website for a year, and I had 7 clients after my training. So I don't think that's necessary. But let me ask you a question, Kathy. What would you need to know in order to feel ready?
What would I need to know in order to feel ready?
Like, what would...
I guess that's the spinning thought. Like, how do you get, you know, outside of, you know, cadets and family and friends, how do you get the word out there if you don't have a place to send people? Like a website or, you know, a blog or whatnot.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good point. But I do think it really starts with your network of people. You know, I think it starts with, you know, reaching out to family and friends and reaching out to acquaintances and reaching out to your local community. And I don't necessarily think you need to have a website to do that. And, you know, do I think it's a good idea that you think start thinking about that? Yes. But I don't think it's a necessary component, because you can go out into your community right now, your local community, and give, you know, talks, give brown bag lunch talks at, you know, companies and other organizations and start to let people know who you are and what it is that you do. And you don't need a website for that. So, I think there are ways that you can start showing up. And, you know, when you're at, you know, cocktail parties or when you're at your kids' soccer games, you know, you can let people know about what it is that you do. And
okay, so let's say you're at a cocktail party and the conversation comes up and someone says, oh, I'm interested, then, and you have, like, oh, here's my phone number, call me. I mean, it just kind of gets started organically like that. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Hand them your business. Have a business card. You can make those up in, you know, 5 minutes online. And, you know, have them email you to set up an appointment, or say, can I offer you a complimentary sample session so you can have the experience of what it's like to be coached? And then, you know, you email them or they email you and you set that up. Do I think a website gives you that kind of that credibility and, like, yes, do I think people like to go check you out before they hire you?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But, again, I know a lot of coaches, myself included, who didn't have a website right away, and I got out into my community and I started talking to people and I sent out that friends and family letter. And what really makes an impact on people is bringing that kind of warmth and humanity and deep personalization to whoever it is that you come in contact with. It's how you make people feel. And so when you can go to a cocktail party and tell people how coaching has changed your life, or tell a story about, you know, what impact it's made on you and how these skills or tools have changed your life, and you can tell a story, I think that's what will draw people to you. And make you more visible. And a lot of the clients that I got from the get-go were from referrals. you know, and I just started, like, you know, I did it again very kind of very organically, and, you know, I had an email list, and I sent that out, and then someone referred me to their sister, and she referred me to her best friend, and that's how it went for a good year.
Okay. That's good. I mean, that's sort of that's sort of happening, but I don't know why I always jump into the visibility thing, but thank you for bringing me back into.
And here's the thing, too, about ready. You sometimes, what I find with coaches is, and I had this experience myself when I was offered a really great opportunity, and I had the thought, I'm not ready. And the truth is that I never felt ready for anything that was outside of my comfort zone. And that's why I asked you that question, because I don't think you're ever going to feel ready. Because I think readiness, sometimes we think, well, I'll feel ready when I'm not afraid, or I'll feel ready when I'm confident, or I'll feel ready when I'm masterful at these tools. And you'll never feel ready if that's your criteria. So just notice if you're having any thoughts about what readiness really means and what you would need to feel in order to think that you were ready. And if it includes any of that, then it's going to be, you're never going to actually go out there and take any action. Because that fear will always be there. It's that lizard part of our brain, right, that's trying to protect us from exposing ourselves to, you know, potential rejection or people not liking what we're doing or, you know, really being vulnerable to that. So, you know, that happened to me, as I said, and I missed out on an opportunity because I didn't feel ready. And I'm like, I haven't done this before. And you know, by the time I got back to the person who offered me the opportunity, he's gone. And then I recognized, oh, I'm thinking I need to not feel afraid. The truth is you're always going to feel a little afraid.
That's true. You know what? Yeah. Thank you. Because I talk in schools to kids, and every time before I start, I'm nervous. And then I leave thinking, oh, that's my most favorite thing on earth. But there is something to that adrenaline that, I get.
Yeah. It's like a good stress. And, you know, story about a little girl who was about ready to go. She was doing a recital, and she said to her mom, I'm really nervous. And her mom said, what does that feel like? She goes, I have this fluttering in my stomach. And she goes, that just means you're ready. And it's true. It you know, we have these sensations in our body and or these vibrations, and we label them as, you know, or I'm nervous, or I'm scared, or I'm not ready for this. And, you know, like we experience that adrenaline. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean anything unless you attach meaning to it.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. So this is Coach the Coach, so I want to make sure that we get some coaching, unless there's any burning questions. One of the things I want to say to you before we jump in, we have some volunteers who want to coach, is I want to offer this to you, since this is a class about really there are no artificial coaching restraints, and I'm not going to be teaching any coaching tools. So, again, you're going to be really called on to play with the core coaching tools, be present, use your marmoset, meet a client where they're at, determine where they are in the change cycle, and use a tool from your toolkit. So again, this is kind of the art of coaching. But I do want to, I want you to keep this in mind during this practicum class, and also, you know, as you're practicing with clients as well. So, the first thing that you want to keep in mind is when you're talking to your client, where are they in the change cycle? And there are clues that you look for, and if you're not aware of those clues, you know, go back to your training binder or go to finding your own North Star. So you should be able to identify where someone is, if they're in square 1, 2, 3, or 4, because that will inform you of what tools to use. Having said that, I think from my experience, probably about 90% or more of your clients will be in square 1. So that's good to know. So even if you don't accurately identify where they are, there's a pretty good chance they're in square one. So if you have a client who is in square one, and given the odds of that, you want to keep in mind what your coaching objective is. And what I'm referring to is the basic coaching model. So does everyone remember what the basic coaching model is? There's six steps. It starts with the first one. The first step starts with living it to give it.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. And then the second step is finding the area of least satisfaction. So you want to make sure that you keep that in the forefront of your mind, because that will help you coach your client if you are aware of where you want to go or what your objective is. So you always want to find the area of least satisfaction if your client's in square one. Find, you know, what's motivating them to have this painful or negative experience, their behavior or emotion. And when I say what's motivating them, what are the thoughts that are causing them to have this negative experience, right? Again, behaviors or feelings. And then you want to identify at least one or more of those painful thoughts and use a dissolving tool to chip away at that, or at least one of those beliefs. So you want to keep that in the forefront of your mind, because that will kind of help anchor you as you're coaching. As well as when you're coaching people, as they're sharing data, information with you about what's not working in their life, you want to remember that framework for coaching, right? Because that will help you structure your coaching session. So if you're hearing a lot of facts or external circumstances, you want to ask, what are you making that mean? So if your client says, my husband came home drunk again last night, that's a fact. So you might not want to say more, although that wouldn't be a necessarily a bad tool to use, but you might want to ask instead, what are you making that mean? So that's very helpful to be able to sort out what your client's saying and categorize it, because that will help you figure out how to get to that those painful thoughts or that painful belief system. So, or if you hear your client sharing a lot of feelings, you know, I'm really feeling unmotivated, or I had a client last week who's saying I'm feeling a lot of doom and gloom, and I had her go into her body. She actually had been experiencing a lot of loss in her life, and I had her go in her body and tell me and describe those sensations. And as she described those sensations, that choked up feeling in her throat, I asked her to articulate what emotion was coming up for her, and there was a lot of sadness there. And then I said, are there any thoughts that are coming up for you around that? And she said, yes, my feelings are going to overwhelm me. So through her body, we were able to identify the emotion that she's been suppressing, as well as the thoughts that were motivating her to suppress those feelings of grief and sadness. So you can do it one of two ways. So I just wanted to point that out to you, because that is really helpful to me, especially if I, you know, in the beginning when I was coaching, I used to get very lost in what my client's story. So keep that in the forefront of your mind as you guys coach. So do you have any questions about that, what I just shared? Or is there any confusion, or do you need clarity?
No, it's fabulous.
Okay. Okay, good. Good. I'm glad. That was valuable. All right. So we have Lori and Kathy and Rachel who volunteered to coach. And I think, Lori, you volunteered first, and I think you said you weren't going to be here for
for the next 2 weeks.
Yes. So you want to jump in?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to coach.
Okay. And is it Lori or Laurel?
Either one.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, I want to make sure I get that right. All right, and who wants to be Lori's client? I know Kathy and Rachel, you both volunteered. Either one of you want to jump in?
Sure, I will. This is Kathy again.
Is this Kathy? Okay, awesome, Kathy.
Yeah.
All right, so, Laura, I'm just going to ask you to tell me what role you want me to play. For example, I can be quiet until you get stuck, or I can be your trusted advisor, kind of popping in every now and then to guide you. But I just want to know what you feel comfortable with.
I'd love to have a trusted advisor. Please feel free to jump in.
Okay. And also, what's your intention today? What do you want? Is there anything in particular you want to focus on or you want to practice or work on as you coach Kathy?
Actually, this is really good because Kathy and I have worked together some on our own, and I have, like when you were talking earlier about getting sort of lost working with people,
mm-hmm.
Kathy is one of the people that I practice with where I tend to get lost with. I could really use some help, sort of focusing in with Kathy.
Okay.
That would be awesome.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Love your enthusiasm.
Well, it's kind of kismet because I've gotten off the phone with Kathy before and thought, why did it take me an hour to get to that one thought? Like I have felt like a really terrible coach working with Kathy some. So this is perfect.
Or you could flip and say it only took me an hour.
Yes, maybe that's
just saying, because maybe 9 months ago you wouldn't have gotten to a thought at all.
Maybe so.
Okay. All right.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm
I know.
Happy
I'm
to help
myself
you
up.
Okay. So great. I will help you in that area if I see places where you can do that. All right.
Okay.
All right. So we'll give you about 15 minutes or so, maybe a little bit more. All right, you can jump in at any time.
Okay, hey, Kathy, how are you?
Hi, Lori, I'm doing good.
Hey, good.
Good.
So what sucks today? What do you want to talk about?
Well, today, well, you know what? It's kind of a recurrent theme, and it just reoccurred last night, and I carried it into today, and I'm like, ugh, back. And it's triggers for me. I'm really working on not being triggered by personality types that like to trigger people. And I'm doing good not getting called out where I don't, but in my head, I can't make it go away. And
can you give me an example of something that happened recently?
I can. It was actually my daughter was talking last night, and she had run into my sister, and it's my younger sister. And my younger sister, I mean, her personality type with me, our blend is difficult because she's sort of passive-aggressive, and I used to always take the bait. And over time, I learned not to do that. But I'm noticing her kind of working on my daughter the same way she used to work on me. And I don't really know where to go with it because I don't want to be in my daughter's business, but I also don't want to be silent to a situation I see starting to brew. So she kind of is a meddler. She likes to meddle, and she likes to definitely in my life. She's a big meddler, and she's starting to pull my daughter in, and I know she's kind of, it looks like she's kind of going to do that meddling and get information on my daughter, and I just don't know exactly how to harness it and what to do about it. Just let my daughter live her life and, you know, see how it pans out or, you know, put the brakes on.
So I'm going to use a tool that I just learned, which is, what are you making that mean? The fact that she's a meddler.
What am I making that mean? What does a meddler mean to me? She's been riding on my shirt tails for a long time. Like she moved in my apartment building when we were younger, and She came to come to parties at my house and try and get people to leave the party. She ended up marrying my husband's cousin. She has the same last name. She got in the throes of getting in our family, and she'd start gossip conversations, and they'd come back to me. And it's just like I, 25 years ago, could have been sitting right next to her in that same gossiping seat. And, you know, but I learned just how shallow it was, and I pulled away from it, and she's just still so there. So I don't put myself in a space with her very often because it starts. And when I don't put myself in a space, she tries to get to people around me to get to me. And I like, she's done it with both of my sons. And what ends up happening is they just get hurt in the midst of it. And, you know, they might share something with her, then she goes and shares it with someone else, and then it gets back. And it's just one of those don't tell her anything unless you want the world to know conversations. So meddling, what do I mean by it? It's just like she's just seems like she's always stirring up, muddying the water. And I got involved with this whole coaching thing to get away from those experiences so I could be like really in the throes of the positive flow. So I noticed today it was on my mind all day. It's been driving me crazy. So it kind of gets in my way, and I'm trying to figure out how to close that compartment in my head, because I've closed it with my mouth. I didn't address it.
I'm going to jump in. Okay, Kathy, I'm going to jump in here for a minute.
So, okay. Laurel.
Yeah.
Yes.
What's happening here? What are you noticing?
There's a lot of thoughts about this other woman coming up.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of them coming in at once. And so what I find, I tend to sit in this place where I'm like, okay, do I pick one thought like, okay, she's always stirring up or muddying the water, and start asking a lot of questions about this other woman and sort of go the judge your neighbor route, like tell me more about this woman and why she annoys you and what should she do, or usually by the time I've thought that, other thoughts have come in. So this is a perfect example.
So Kathy's doing what we call kind of story fondling, right? So she when you asked her, what are you making that mean, which is a great question, that she's a meddler, she heard what is a meddler mean? And so she started being more, you know, specific and articulate about how she meddles. Right.
Right.
And wasn't really your question, right? Your question was, what are you making it mean?
For her, right?
Right. Yeah. What is she making it mean for her? And she didn't answer that. She just got into her story. So Kathy's, you know, giving you a lot of circumstantial information along with some thoughts in there for sure about, and I think this is her sister. Is that right, Kathy?
Oh, yeah.
Her younger sister?
Okay.
So it's not over. Not anyone that's her younger sister that's doing this. And so she's giving you a lot of information on how she's kind of trying to stay away from your sister and, you know, not spend a lot of time with her and not kind of getting in that space with her. But she's doing it. The problem is what, Laurel? What is the problem? Because we want to identify what the problem is. The younger sister is doing what that's a problem for Kathy?
She's meddling in other people's business, and it's bothering
She's meddling in whose business?
Everyone else's.
No, she said she's meddling.
Or that's the question for Kathy. That's the question for
Kathy.
Well,
no, she said it. She said she's meddling in my daughter's business.
Okay.
Do you remember saying that?
That's
important, because that you always want to identify what's the problem. Right, and you're going to coach the problem, right? Which is her, and that could be a thought too, right? That
right,
her,
she's meddling in my daughter's business.
Yeah, and she shouldn't. Right.
Right.
Okay. So that's a painful thought, and I would take note of that. Now, from here, if you've got someone who kind of goes in the story and wants to talk and is kind of, you know, talking without a blast, you're going to need to interrupt your client. Because when we don't interrupt our client, we kind of inadvertently contribute to that kind of story fondling by not
yeah.
right? And
yes.
you actually, as a coach, feel more out of control and
yes.
more overwhelmed because you're getting all this information that now
yes.
you're going to have to sort through. Right?
Yes.
Is that how you feel?
Yes. That's
yeah.
perfect. Yes.
Yeah. So you're going to need to say,
yeah.
Kathy, I'm going to interrupt you for a minute so
okay.
I can see if I'm getting a feel for what the issue is, or, you know, use your own words. But you're going to need
right.
to interrupt her for sure.
Because
that's part
to something
of
like,
how this is why you're
yeah.
getting caught up, right? Is because you're
yeah.
not interrupting her. All right. So from there, when you interrupt her, from there, you can do one of two things. With Kathy, I might ask her to take a couple of deep breaths because there's I can hear a lot of adrenaline and a lot of energy. So you might
okay.
want to just have her take a couple of deep breaths. I always think that's great for clients who, you know, have, you know, a lot of energy behind their story. And then use those tools. So what do you make, you could say, what are you making it mean that your sister is meddling in your daughter's business?
Okay.
Or what's so uncomfortable, which I like
right.
better.
What's wrong with that? Okay.
Well, I like what's so uncomfortable or what's okay. bad about your sister meddling in your daughter's business. And by the way, FYI, everyone, that's a thought that I'm putting in the circumstance category. She's meddling. Because that's a thought you could take to inquiry if you wanted. But if you wanted to go deeper, Laurel, you could say what's so uncomfortable.
Okay.
And use it as the circumstance. Does that make sense? Because that's not a
yeah.
fact, right? It's a thought. But sometimes we could put thoughts into the circumstance category to get a little deeper. So what's uncomfortable to you about your sister being in your daughter's business? Because there's a fear there.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So I hope I didn't
yes.
overwhelm you.
Right. No, this is going right to the heart of
yeah.
both my issue as a coach, what's been coming up, not only with Kathy, but with some other people as well,
mm-hmm.
as well as my need to go back and really look at the difference between a circumstance or a thought. I mean, this is
mm-hmm.
great. This is perfect.
Okay, good. All right, so go back in there.
So, Kathy, thank you for letting me thank you for the timeout that I needed there.
No problem.
For both of us. So before we jump back in, let's both take a couple of breaths and let's breathe really deep. Because I'm learning just as much as you are, and I want to appreciate that. So now that we've established that the problem is really that this woman is meddling in your daughter's business, tell me where I'm wrong.
You're not wrong.
Okay. What I just want to ask, what's so uncomfortable about that?
Nothing good comes out of it. And there's a history there of that being true. So that's where I feel uncomfortable.
What's your fear there? You said nothing good comes out of it.
Mm-mm. Nothing good has come out. What's my fear there? Just
yeah.
the negative energy and how wasteful the time is in that swirling pool.
Swirling pool in, where's the swirling pool?
It's the way my sister starts, and then it just, you know, the results are always ugly for the person that she starts, you know, doing it with. And if you bite, you know, and my daughter is at a great stage in life, she's, you know, she's 20 years old, and she's really happy with who she is and what she's doing. And I just don't
want to see her get caught up the way I got caught up. It took me years to figure out how to navigate passive aggressive behaviors with people and stuff. And I just, that's where I'm at. I don't want to be in her business, but I also don't want to not be a mom.
So tell me where I'm wrong. The fear is that your daughter will get caught up in passive aggressive behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this is a good point for another timeout.
Okay. Okay, good.
Because, okay, so there's the fear. So the problem mm-hmm. is sister's meddling with my daughter's business. The fear is that the daughter will get caught up in stuff that it's taking Kathy years to figure out how not to get caught up in.
Mm-hmm.
So where's the thought?
Okay. Well, here's the thing. So that's kind of more of a, what I call like an eagle eye perspective.
Okay.
I'd like to see you refine that thought a little bit more. It's a little broad and it's a little general, right? Because I don't know what passive aggressive behavior is. I mean, she's kind of explaining, articulating that, you know, meddling and, you know, doing all sorts of things. And that's not actually entirely relevant. And I think that you have some really good questions, like what's your fear? And she said, I don't want to see her get caught up. And so this is exactly where you need to ask some more questions. So this is what I say to clients. Let's say your sister, let's walk down that path, and I'll use those words. Let's say your sister continues to meddle in your daughter's business and your daughter gets caught up with it. Why is that so uncomfortable? What would be bad about that?
Okay, that makes more sense. Because we're trying to speak with Kathy.
What do you think is...
Or her sister, right?
What?
Yeah.
We're trying to get to why she wants to protect her daughter so much. What's her fear? Now, I know what it is. Do you have a hunch? Like, if I was just talking to you, if I said, Laurel, let's go to Starbucks right now, and it's between you and me. She's trying to protect her daughter from her sister's meddling behavior. What do you think she's protecting her from?
Yeah, okay, I guess my hunch would be, that her sister is going to pull her daughter away from her. And she's going to, like, lose her daughter to this crazy-making sister. That would be a hunch.
Maybe.
That's
yeah.
The fear.
My hunch is that she doesn't want her daughter to be hurt. I think she might have even said that. She's protecting her from getting hurt, which is natural, right? She's a mama there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We don't want our babies to be hurt. So she's seeing all this destructive behavior from her sister, and she wants to protect her daughter from getting hurt. And that's why she doesn't want her to get caught up. So the fear is she doesn't want her, it's not that she doesn't want, the fear is not her getting caught up in it, it's what will happen if she does, which is she will get hurt, and maybe there's something more refined in there. So you could either, and I'm bringing that up because you could either say, hey, Kathy, my hunch is that you don't want your daughter to get hurt by your sister's meddling behavior. Tell me where I'm wrong. Or if you could go the other route, which is what is so, let's say she does, let's walk down that path. Let's say she does get caught up. Your daughter does get caught up in your sister's meddling behavior. What's so uncomfortable about that? Why would that be so bad? Why do we care? That's what you want to pull out from her, because that's what's creating this conflict in Kathy about whether to get, you know, whether to let her daughter live her life and, you know, stay out of her business, or whether to interfere. That's the problem. That's the conflict she's experiencing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
okay.
One of those two paths.
All right, Kathy, are you still there?
I'm still here, Liz.
As we talk about
okay.
me in front of you.
I know.
That's okay.
Wow. Thanks for the Starbucks poaches.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's walk down this path. I'm trying all sorts of new sentences and tools here. So let's walk down that path. Let's say your sister continues to meddle in your daughter's business. Why would that be so bad?
Because she's brought it to an art form, and it just nothing good comes out of it. I have lived it since she was 17, and she's in her 50s. It gets ugly. And the family dynamic, it just starts. It's a lot to navigate.
What does it say about you if that happens? Is that a harsh question? I hope not.
What does it say about me? I don't know. I'm at that fork in the road. I'm really trying to not, you know, pre-plan the future, but this one has quite a history. It's got some long legs. And I get a sense for things, and there's a sense here, and I'm just, that's where I'm at. There's a sense where, you know, I wish my sister would just work on someone else and leave us out of it and quit trying to get somehow another, you know, avenue into my life and getting in the middle of my life and go live your own.
So, Kathy, if she doesn't move on to somebody else and she keeps meddling in your daughter, what does that mean?
Means my daughter either have to suffer the consequence or figure it out and not allow for it.
I know this other coach, she has this hunch that you don't want your daughter to get hurt. Tell me where she's wrong.
No, I don't want her to get hurt by my sister. I know she's going to get hurt in life, but this one I have extreme, I have a lot of experience with, so it's gotten ugly, and I've finally gotten to the other side of it myself, and I just don't have the energy, because, you know, my daughter essentially is going to come to me at all points. She does with everything, and, you know, I have to be prepared for how to navigate it, so it feels like it's pulling me back in, too, so that's where I'm at.
So is the problem more that you're getting pulled back into this issue?
That could be it's kind of, yeah, I mean, it's kind of interwoven. She's pulling my daughter. If she pulled me back in, I'm equipped. I at this point, I don't get pulled back in because I've learned. You know, it's taken me years to get solid on how to, you know, be, you know, in a conversation even with my sister and not get sucked into her stuff. So, yeah, if she came towards me, but that could create the issue because I will speak to it. And then here we go again.
Okay, I'm going to jump in here for a minute. Okay, so I want to circle back to something because I think we're on a little hot track there and got a little cold when you asked the question, what does it say about you? So she's still notice every time you ask a question, Kathy has a tendency to put the focus on the sister as opposed to really refining the thought, which is really what your goal is at this point in the game, is to distill and refine her thinking. So when she said, my daughter will suffer the consequences, we're getting a little traction there, right? So this, I would keep saying to her, this is what I would say to her, well, what might those consequences be? So we can refine it. So when she says, well, because you put out that hunch, and she said, and she's starting to modify it a little bit, right? Well, it's not that she shouldn't get hurt. You know, I know she's going to be hurt in life, but she doesn't want her to suffer the consequences with her sister meddling. So here's what I'm going to, at this juncture, you could probably kind of continue to ask her questions. And if I had, you know, 45 minutes with Kathy, or if you had 45 minutes with Kathy, I would encourage you to ask her, well, why would that be so bad if she suffers these consequences? Or what consequences are you anticipating that she is going to suffer, right? So you can try that. Or what I suggest at this point, because I think this is a painful thought, the one that she said a few minutes ago, which is, do you remember what the painful thought is that she has about her sister? That she shouldn't what?
She shouldn't meddle in her daughter's business.
Yeah, yeah.
Just go back to that one?
Yeah, I would. I would actually, I'm going to change my mind here a little bit. See if you can distill and refine that thought. Just see, if, you know, the suffering, the consequences. So I would ask Kathy a couple questions about that. What consequences are you anticipating if your daughter gets caught up in your sister's meddling? And see if she can refine that a little bit, or you can get her to refine that a little bit, because that's what we want to do. That's what she's protecting her from. What are these consequences that she's protecting her from?
Okay.
Okay? And then, and see where you go. And if you don't get anywhere with that, then you can circle back to that other one.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
You're doing a great job.
Thank you. I just want to, I don't want to take up the whole time, so I want to make sure that we've got time for this. So feel free to stop me at any point. So Kathy, tell me more about the consequences that your daughter may suffer if she gets caught up with your sister's meddling.
I want you to be more direct. So it sounds something like this. So Kathy, what exact consequence are you anticipating that your daughter will suffer?
Okay. Kathy, what exact consequence do you anticipate your daughter will suffer? What's going to happen to her?
Beautiful.
What's going to happen to her? Well, that's why I'm not in her business. I'm not exactly sure, but my experience for me, it hurts. It's a trust thing, because once you get caught in it and you realize you're in it, it's like you kind of let your guard down and you trusted somebody, then they kind of spew information you shared with them to other people, and it just starts a big circular event of rough stuff.
Can you refine that down anymore, Kathy? Because I'm having trouble following.
You've got it.
Laurel.
You're having trouble.
Got it. Hold on. You got it, Laurel.
Okay.
What did she say? I'm going to help you refine this, because she just did.
Well,
what did she say?
She described a whole big cycle of, like, I just got, like, this sense of absolute swirl, like getting pulled in, going out.
Right, but what's the feeling? There's a feeling she put in there. She said it hurts.
Fresh?
She will get hurt. She will get hurt.
Right.
She will get hurt. So it's kind of going back to that punch you threw out. So how would you frame that thought up? So it might sound like
my daughter will get
hurt by what?
My daughter will get hurt by my sister.
By my sister's meddling.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the painful thought.
That's the painful thought.
Yeah. So put that out as a hunch. Well, because you're new at it. That's all. Right?
Okay.
So put that out. So frame that up. When I say frame that up, you want to put that out like. So, Kathy, what I'm hearing is that you believe that your sister will get hurt by your sister's that your daughter will get hurt by your sister's meddling. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Oh, that's good.
Okay. So just put that out to her and see what comes back, because you always want to give your client the opportunity to agree with it before you go to dissolve it or to change it a little bit if it doesn't quite sit with her. But that's what she said. So you're just reframing it for her.
So, Kathy, what I heard was my daughter will get hurt by my sister's meddling. Tell me where I'm wrong.
You're not wrong at all.
Okay.
Okay. So then that could be a thought that we could do thought with.
Yeah, totally. Right?
Yeah.
So good job, Laurel. I mean, seriously, that was not easy. I could have had you stop at, you know, my sister shouldn't meddle in my daughter's business. But we got a little deeper there with some of those questions, and this wasn't, you know, Kathy wasn't handing you thoughts on a silver platter. She made you work for it, not intentionally. And this is such good practice, because you're going to have a lot of clients like this who don't know. They're upset by someone else's behavior, and they get into the story about and focus their time and energy on what that other person is doing. And it can be challenging to ask those questions to really distill and refine their thinking in order to chip away at those belief systems. Right? Kathy was a little, was a little slippery there, right? And that's what happened. I am probably the most slippery client you've ever met, so I can relate. And not intentionally, just that we could be slippery with ourselves, right? And we naturally want to, you know, blame our external circumstances for how we're feeling. And the whole goal of being a Martha Beck coach is to go deep and uncover that, you know, those personal religions or that dogmatic thinking, my sister shouldn't meddle in other people's business. That's so true. And she's got lots of evidence for how horrific the consequences have been as a result.
Yeah.
So, you know, this isn't about condoning or, you know, proving of her sister, you know, meddling. It's about what thoughts get triggered for her that are causing her pain, so that she could have inspired action, which is, you know, maybe staying out of her daughter's business, like she feels inclined to do. But she's feeling pulled, right, to protect her daughter, because she has this thought that her daughter shouldn't get hurt, right, which is causing conflict. Okay, so you did awesome. And I want to give you feedback, but I want to check in with I want Kathy to give you feedback first, and then I want to hear what you thought. So, Kathy, how was that experience? Do you have feedback for Laurel?
It was good. I do, Laurel. I know that I'm wordy with things, so I appreciate you staying the course with me, because it is, although it's charted waters with me, I still have not been able to laugh through this painful thought/situation, circumstance, external, be it what it is. So thank you, because I've been wrestling it for years and years and years. So for you to wrestle it in such a short amount of time in front of a bunch of people, I think you did a really good job. And and we can hit it more head on in, you know, future conversations. So I appreciate it.
Yeah. Did you feel like you got some relief in just identifying a couple of thoughts that are operating here around your sister?
I'm working on that. I don't know. I don't know. And I know that's where I know that I've got it dialed into that, but all the stories come up and my head just gets crazy like I did in front of you guys. So I feel more relaxed as far as my body compass. So that's
good
there. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Yeah, and it's, I wasn't inferring that you should feel like 100% better, but I know that sometimes in just identifying the painful thought, there's sometimes relief in that. And if your body compass is, or body's more relaxed about it, that definitely suggests to me that there is. And there's probably a cluster of thoughts here too, right, Kathy?
That you have
a sister. So this is just one or two of probably a plethora of them. Tell me where I'm wrong.
No, it's been quite a lifetime of it, so you're not wrong at all.
Yeah. So, Lori, how was that for you?
That was scary and overwhelming because that, I know that's been an issue for me that's come up before, and I think what's happening for me as a coach is, like, I tend to get really swept away by
mm-hmm.
some people,
mm-hmm.
And it's really hard for me to not get swept away and break it down instead to use
mm-hmm.
– it's like using two different tools. Like, there's an empathy tool that's so natural for me, but
mm-hmm.
there's another tool that's more logical and reason, and trying to break down the problem – is so difficult when I get swept away.
Mm-hmm. So when you say you get swept away by the details of the story?
No, by a client's feeling. Like once
some people
get going and they start to share the feeling or of the suffering, then I'm pulled right in.
Yeah.
And it's hard to separate from that.
Yeah. So, and a lot of times, and I think sometimes we operate in this place where we think empathy and asking questions to really get to the heart of the matter are mutually exclusive. And I think you mm-hmm. can be very loving and empathetic and compassionate using your energy. So it's almost like when you really love and care for your client, that when you ask those questions from that place, you are naturally transmuting empathy. So it's about just using your empathy differently, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So, and this, by the way, this wasn't easy. I mean, this, and I think you did a really great job. So I hope that you see what you did well. I think that is the most challenging thing coaches face, you know, after they come out of training or even in training at the end of your training for sure now, is being able to sort through all of that data. Right?
Yeah.
And you did
uh-huh.
a great job. I mean, right from the get-go, you said, can you give me an example? That helped her to hone down where she's getting triggered, because Kathy talks was talking in generalities, right? So when your client's talking generalities, give me an example is a great way to have them narrow in on where they're getting triggered. So immediately you got to the sister being the problem, right? And then all it is remembering, what's your coaching objective? To identify the problem, get to the painful thought. You ask some great questions. What are you making it mean that she's a meddler? What's so uncomfortable about that? What's your fear? What do you make it mean about you? I mean, all of those questions were really good questions to really help her draw out, or make it more conducive to draw out the thoughts. Now, this is where you just need more practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you hear a lot of circumstantial detail, not to kind of get caught up with that and go, oh, that's facts. Her sister is getting in someone's business, right? Although that's a thought we're putting in the circumstance category. And being able to recognize, oh, there's a feeling there, right?
Uh-huh.
Or there's the more that you can just start to listen to data as people talking, the better you're going to get at this. But you got to a painful thought in like 20 minutes.
Good
my hope, but you got there. And that But that was really good practice for you, because I promise you, Laurel, you're going to start coaching differently because of this experience.
Yeah, I think so. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so I think you did a really, really great job, and I want you to see how much progress you have made. And now that you're onto yourself and see that you got caught up in the story, in someone's story, you can start to interrupt your client. Real important that you do that. So if you guys have any thoughts about interrupting your client like it's rude, do the work on that, because it's rude not to interrupt your client, right? And that's number one. And also recognize how you're, if you're getting caught up because you're empathizing with your client's story. So the two things that sometimes go wrong when we coach is we're either too aggressive or we're too sympathetic, right?
Yeah.
And so when we're too aggressive, things don't go well when you're coaching, or when you're too sympathetic, you get caught up in the story. And as a coach, it's really important not to get caught up in the story. That's why I said what I said at the beginning, which is remember your coaching objective, because you can be empathetic and ask questions, because the most loving and the most kind and the most empathetic thing you can do is help the client to recognize the story they're telling themselves or the thoughts they're telling themselves about the circumstance. Because she can't do anything about her sister. She can't control her sister. But she can come to a place of peace and calm by recognizing what she's telling herself about what her sister's doing, which is, this is going to be bad, this is going to be ugly, my daughter's going to get hurt, you know, and, you know, taking those thoughts and bringing them to inquiry. My sister shouldn't meddle. That's a thought, that's a painful thought. But my daughter's going to get hurt by my sister's meddling is a little deeper, right? Or my daughter shouldn't get hurt by my sister's meddling.
Hmm.
But my daughter will get hurt. Because when you think about the turnarounds, which I'm always thinking about as a coach, my daughter will get hurt by my meddling. My daughter will not get hurt by my sister's meddling. I mean, those could be some powerful turnarounds. Or, my sister shouldn't meddle, I should meddle. I shouldn't meddle in my sister's business. I shouldn't meddle in my daughter's business, right?
Right.
Whether she's meddling or not, she's mentally meddling. Make sense?
Yep.
Okay, so Kathy.
So yes.
Like, sorry for talking about you in front of your back, but
that's okay.
Anyway, that's just a little hint for all of you guys who are listening. When I'm, you know, looking at thoughts or when I'm detecting thoughts, I'm always thinking about what, you know, what those turnarounds will look like. Because remember, a lot of why we get hooked in to other people is the projection. We project onto other people, which is why we have these reactions, right? And we all do. We all get hooked in. I get hooked in, you get hooked in, and we project onto other people. She shouldn't be meddling. Look at where you're meddling. And that's the beauty of the of doing the work on these painful thoughts. All right, questions about that? Good job, Laurel.
Thank you for your help.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for your openness to my helping. Yeah. Okay, any questions about that, you guys?
Good job.
Okay. So remember, we want to be able, part of why we didn't go through the dissolving tool because we didn't have time. I think this is the most challenging part of coaching someone who has a square one issue, is asking those questions to be able to identify that cluster of thoughts, or at least one painful thought, and there were many here. And also, eventually, taking it to inquiry so that Kathy, if we went further, could make a decision from a place of peace and calm, right? Not from a story-based place, because we can never make sound and logical decisions when we're so entangled in our thoughts, our painful thoughts about what someone should or shouldn't be doing. Never, never, never good. So it may be that, you know, if you took this to inquiry, Kathy may choose to say something to your sister or may choose to say something to her daughter. Like, I have concerns, or this is my compulsion, is I want to go in there and protect you because I'm a mama bear, but realize I need to stay in my business. But you don't want to do that kind of symptom coaching until you, you know, chip away at the belief first so that she can take action from that clean place. Okay. So we have, like, maybe, like, 10 or 15 minutes to do, like, a little shorty session. So how about who wanted to coach? I think it's Rachel. Rachel, you want to coach?
Yes, please.
Yes. Okay, so who wants to be Rachel's client? Anybody? Or do I need to institute the draft?
Somebody be my client.
Yes. How about Linda? Linda? Have you been a client?
I am getting off mute. I'm struggling to come up with an issue that I have to be coached on in 5 minutes or even at all. Like, you know, not like I'm enlightened or anything, but
okay.
I just don't have something to bring right this second.
Okay. Does anyone else have an issue? Like Meg, or if you don't, I won't believe you. Or Carrie? Tiffany?
Hello.
Come on, you guys. Hello.
I had to unmute. I was just thinking the same thing. I'm trying to think of something that is smallish.
Well, let Rachel do that. How about that? Not carrying that burden. Doesn't have to be small. Even if she gets, you know, obviously we don't come to completion with these coaching sessions. So who's talking now?
This is Carrie.
Carrie. Okay. Would you be willing to give it a shot?
Sure.
Okay. Awesome. Okay, Rachel. So I would like you to consider when you open up this coaching session with Carrie, maybe asking some very specific questions like what's not working in your life, what can be better, what do you want more of? Because you already know a little bit, like she might not have something, so you maybe want to be a little bit more directive. And also, would you like me to play the same role as I played with Laurel?
Yes, that would be great.
Okay, awesome. So we'll give you a few minutes and see how far you can go.
Okay, and my intention in this is to be fill the flow and be a leader in a short amount of time. So
awesome. Great intention.
Okay. All right. Carrie, thank you so much for being a willing participant here today. So I like the question, what do you want more of right now? What's going on in your life that you would like more of?
Oh, gosh. Seems like a lot. More love, more security, I was going to say knowledge, but I think it has more to do with security, more solidity.
Solidity. That sounds, it does, yeah. Say more about security. Do you have a specific example of what is maybe feeling a little insecure right now that you'd like to be more secure?
It's kind of a biggie, though. So my husband and I are in the process of getting divorced, and we're right at that stage where we're we have to put things down on paper, but a lot is still up in the air. And so I feel like there's much about my future that is up in the air. And that's a very insecure place.
Absolutely. Yeah, being in the air. Sounds like you're reaching for some roots. Tell me where I'm wrong. Some, like, your own roots, maybe.
I would love my own roots. I think what's particularly hard about this particular place is it's not only a transition place, but it's like a suspended place. It feels like there's not a lot I can do in this place of waiting, because it will. So I sort of have the comfort of knowing, well, it will get sorted out in the next few months. And then I will at least know where I stand. And then I have the opportunity to start growing roots as a new sort of life. But in this place of waiting is hard.
Mm-hmm. So that thought of not a lot you can do, let's take a look at that if you're willing. So how does that feel when you think there's not a lot you can do?
Okay, I'm going to jump in here.
Yeah.
You're doing great. I love how you started this off with that question. I love that you said you have a specific example. That's beautiful. I mean, so far, so great. So I want to help you maybe craft a different question versus kind of honing in on what was your question? Not knowing what to do or not doing anything or not being able to do anything?
Yeah, just taking a look at not a lot I can do as a statement.
Yeah, yeah. So she said a lot about, you know, this place of kind of being in limbo, right? She's in this transition place, a place of suspension. She's feeling, she wants more security. She's obviously feeling insecure. And she says part of the reason why, or most maybe even she's attributing that to being in this transition in terms of her marriage, right?
Right.
So, as a coach, what I think might be really helpful is to maybe ask her what's uncomfortable about not knowing where you stand or what's uncomfortable about waiting. Because it's a fact, right, that she's in this transition, that there's probably nothing she can do right now to kind of move that along. And she's thinking that once things get moved along, she'll be able to feel more secure once she maybe knows some certain information, I'm assuming like where our finances are going to turn out or where she's going to live, et cetera. I'm making some inferences here. But I think as a coach, you want to see what you can uncover about what's uncomfortable about the circumstance. What's causing her to feel so insecure?
Oh, yeah.
What are the thoughts that are kind of contributing to this? Does that make sense, Rachel?
It absolutely does. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
And someone agrees.
All right.
It's a dog.
Oh. Okay, Carrie. So what, as you're in limbo here in a transition space, what is so uncomfortable about waiting? What's making you uncomfortable?
I think just the fear of the unknown, I guess. I'm not always afraid of it. I can sometimes tell myself that it will be, I can reassure myself that most likely everything will be fine. But I think it's just because it's not settled, because there's nothing yet on paper. It's that fear that something could go badly. Or I think specifically financially is my concern.
Okay. So specifically finances, things could go badly. So if you were to go down that path of things going badly, what's the, Jackie, help me out here. I want to say what's the worst that could happen? Is that like?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's, so that's, you asked a great question. So now it's fear of the unknown. Now you're getting a little bit more refined that something will go badly. So have her be more specific. Yeah. About what does she think will go badly? So this is where you might even want to say, so it sounds like, you know, your more wise, evolved self reassures yourself that everything's going to be okay, but maybe that lizard part of your brain has some fears about it not going the way that you want. So what does that reptilian part of your brain tell you about it going badly? So see if you can,
Okay. All right, Carrie. So yeah, as your lizard's making its voice known here in the situation, and it sounds like you are consoling, you know, doing your best to console, and you know there's a bigger picture out there, but the lizard sounds like he's kind of screaming at you right now of things are going to, and what, any idea what those thoughts the lizard specifically might have for you that feel the most unsettling?
I was just going to say that what she said was, or what you guys are both saying is true, that it is, it's a little bit of it's a back and forth in my own head where the, the lizard fear has come up and then I'm able to talk it down for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has a lot to do with my house. One of my specific fears is that we will have to move.
Okay.
And that makes me sad. But I also, in better times, I also can recognize that that may not be a bad thing. But that's one specific, specific thing. Or just like a change in the, I guess when I think of it, there's sort of a lot. A change in the way we live, forcing me to be completely independent in managing my own finances.
Yeah, I hear a lot there, right? So you said sad about potentially moving, the change in your circumstances. If you do move, that will change a lot for sure. And forcing you to be independent. So which one of those does the lizard have the most juice with? Is it the sad? Is it the change? You know, like there's going to be a lot of change overall, or is it the independence, forcing you to be independent? You said finances and on your... Or, like, on your own?
I'm not even really sure. And then there's a part of me that says that there's not even really a point in delving into those fears because they're so... most of those fears I know are not logical and are not likely to come true, but it's just sort of if I can hold, you know, if I can just survive through this waiting time... I won't have to delve into those fears because they won't manifest. And
Right. So that sounds to me like you're able to comfort yourself again and say that it could not happen, but the fear, tell me where I'm wrong, is still bubbling underneath.
I think that's right. That's why that's the discomfort in the waiting. Because if it were all guaranteed to turn out well in the end, I would just chill and relax. right? Wouldn't be so uncomfortable.
Mm, yeah. Right. You'd find your zen, the lizard would be quiet, all would be good.
Mm-hmm.
So the comfort, let's go back to the discomfort. So again, what's uncomfortable about waiting? Like what's, so we have the fear, we have the sad, the change, the potential independence. What is, Jackie, I feel like I'm a little stuck.
Yeah, so this is, you know, this is a great teaching opportunity, a teaching moment, because you help to kind of narrow down and hone in on what some of those lizard fears are, and she's backing off, right? Which is, you know, I just, you know, as long as, if I can get through this waiting period, you know, and know that everything's going to be okay, I'll feel more, you know, comfortable if I could just survive this, right? And so, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what we do. It's just like, and it, I think it's also important to address. So if I have a client like this, and I think you were kind of on to her a little bit because she's like, yeah, if I could just kind of get through this, and yet, and then you responded with, but what's causing the discomfort is are these lizard fears, that reptilian part of your brain that's saying, well, what if I have to move, and what if I have a change in my lifestyle, and, you know, what if I have to be, you know, more independent in managing my finances? So, you know, she's wanting to just kind of figure out a way to kind of survive through this. And so I would probably just want to say, and just for a moment, if I'm going to jump in now. So, Carrie, is that the goal? Do you just want to survive this, or do you want to feel more secure as you wait for, you know, the settlement to happen?
Well, of course, I want to feel more secure.
Okay.
I would love to have it not be bubbling under the surface.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, Rachel, I just wanted to model that because I think that's important because she was starting to, she identified some of her fears and then she was being a little slippery like, well, I don't even want to delve into them, right? I just want to survive. And so now it was an opportunity as her coach to really clarify, well, is that what you want? Do you want to survive or you want to feel more secure? And then.
Right.
So it was almost like I then left it up to her to
Perfect.
Decide
yes.
what it is she wants to feel because that was going to inform me and inform mm-hmm. you how to proceed with her. So she might have said, right. I just want to survive. Okay, well, then we don't need to coach you around this. What would you need, or maybe it was it, what would you need to know in order to survive? What does that mean for you to survive?
Mm.
Okay. Why do you just want to survive this?
Mm-hmm.
Right? But she
yeah.
said something different. She says, well, no, I don't want to survive. I want to feel more secure. So I guess I need to look at these lizard fears. So then it wasn't you or me saying, but we've got, you know, trying to force her to look at him.
Right.
It was
yeah.
her making that decision.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So we don't have a whole lot of time, but I think this would be a good opportunity for you to kind of circle back and say to her, okay, given what you just said, that you want to feel more secure of these three areas that you identified, if you would feel more relief in order to feel more secure or more at peace, which area of your life or which particular issue do you think has the most resonance for you?
Okay.
And put it in your own words. Okay.
Okay. So we're going to go for a few more
Yeah, questions. Go for just a couple more minutes and just see if you can have her hone in an area and maybe frame up a thought.
Okay. All right, Carrie. So you said you would like to feel more secure. So out of the three that we talked about, the sadness of moving out of the house, the fear of just general change in circumstances, or forcing you to be more independent in your finances, which one would feel better to have some relief with? What's the most, the lizard screaming at you the most with?
As you guys were talking, I was sort of trying to decide that myself. For some reason, it seems like the house has all of this emotional charge around it.
Okay. You mentioned sad. So sad and the emotional charge of the house. My hunch would be that the house is a symbol of everything kind of changing and ending. Tell me where I'm wrong.
It probably is a symbol of something.
Okay. If it's, do you have kids?
Yes.
So
it will be, it will be a pretty big deal for all of us if we move.
Okay. Different schools, different neighborhoods.
Okay, Rachel. Well, you're doing what we call leading. Will it be, will be this, will be that. So I'd love to see you ask more of an open-ended question. So you could ask, well, what are you making that mean if you have to move? Let's say you do have to move.
Okay.
What are you making that mean? Because we don't know.
Right, absolutely.
So instead of kind of like,
So what are you making it mean that everything would change if you have to move?
I guess it feels like it would be a very big. It would be really challenging in different ways because we would both want the kids to stay at the same schools. So we would, when I say both, when I say we, I'm meaning the kids' dad and I. So we would be wanting us to find a place that were in the same, that was in the same neighborhood, which would be challenging. So I think that's sort of a biggie. And then there's all of the, I think what's sort of also emotionally charged for me is if we have to put the house on the market, I imagine having to go through the entire house and pack everything up. And then that makes me feel really sad. I think it's like the ending. It feels like it's such a strong, I don't know how to, it's hard for me to articulate it. Something sort of final, I guess, about it.
Okay, I'm going to jump in. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, well, even at the same time, I also have other thoughts that are like, well, that's good and that's appropriate under the circumstances.
Okay, so I'm just going to jump in here just because due to time constraints. So, Rachel, what do you think? Like, if I were, I'm taking out to Starbucks, like I took Laura out to Starbucks, and if I said, hey, what's happening with Carrie? What's going on with Carrie? How was your coaching session? What would you, at this juncture, what would you say to me? What do you think Carrie's experiencing?
My intuition, she's still in resistance to letting go.
Okay. And what do you think she's resisting What feeling do you think she's resisting? Well, why do you think she's resisting letting go?
I think she might be resisting just feeling the sad of things ending.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if she's resisting it. She may be anticipating it. I don't have enough information to know if she's resisting it, but she's definitely talking about how sad it's going to be in packing up her house. And there's probably a lot of truth to that. So this is where you kind of want to step back and be able to identify that this is a clean pain issue. There's some dirty pain in here for sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's some thoughts about having to manage her finances and the lifestyle change and what she makes that mean. Mm-hmm. But the piece about packing up the house and her anticipation in packing up the house is all these feelings of sadness, the finality of the end of this relationship.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so, I get what you're saying about that.
Yeah. So with a client like this, what would you do if you had more time? Where would you go with her, knowing this information?
I would be inclined to go to thought work, like once we could frame up a thought about why, with the sadness or body compass,
mm-hmm.
And just kind of feel where the sadness is and.
Mm-hmm.
See if that produces any thoughts that could be worked on.
Yeah, so when you have a client who is going through some clean pain, right, like, mm-hmm. and this is definitely falls in the clean pain category, right, the divorce.
Right, yeah.
I wouldn't do thought work with them. I might notice, you started to go down that path and there's definitely some thoughts there, but as you start to ask her questions, you know, as you asked her that, you know, when I asked her, does she want to survive or feel more secure? And then you went in there, she talked about what was most resonant for her was packing up the house. So we want to meet a client where they're at, right? And so she brought you to the sadness. I would meet her there.
Okay.
Because if you're right and there's any resistance to that, this would be a good opportunity and a good opening for you to have her start to feel her feelings.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? And I wouldn't do thought work with her at this point because is resisting her feelings, it would be much easier to focus on her thinking, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, oh, it's going to be challenging to find schools, and that could be overwhelming, and blah, 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 and you can, like, turtle step that and do all that or find some thoughts, oh, I have to manage my finances independently. But what's really coming up for her is the metaphor that you said of this house and what that symbolizes. And what she's saying is that symbolizes the ending, a finality, this loss, the sense mm-hmm. of sadness.
Yeah. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So that, yeah.
Right,
so, yeah. So I would even, you know, invite you and if you want, you and Carrie offline to maybe continue this if you feel inclined to, and do more body work with her, mind body work with her, have her, you know, maybe talk about where that feeling is in her body, what vibration she's experiencing, where she's experiencing that, to help her really feel her feelings so that those aren't, because there's going to be other stuff that's overwhelming, but usually what tends to be most overwhelming to us is the feelings that come up. And so I think that would really benefit her and any client who's in this place of the square one where there's clean pain accompanied by dirty pain to be able to get them to really feel their emotions. And that's one of the greatest gifts you can give to your client. And often we don't know. I mean, I have clients who say, I don't know how to feel my feelings. And so as a coach, I think it's important that you help your client think into that. And the way you do it is by simply saying, where do you feel that sadness in your body? And have them describe it. Because when they describe it, they're kind of slightly in the role of observer, and it's not as overwhelming, but they're still experiencing what they're feeling.
Yeah.
In the description of it. Does that make sense, Rachel?
It really does. This is clean pain. It's like when there's, I totally get that. Yeah, that makes sense about not doing the thought work because it's too, it's almost like trauma is happening. You don't do anything heavy lifting. You just let it kind of be and help them explore it.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. So I would take note of those thoughts because at some point if you were coaching her, I would want to address them. But that's not where the pain is. That's she's telling you in every way it's the sadness.
Yeah.
It's the house.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So good job. So what did you think? Sorry, you guys, if we're going over a little bit. We'll just wrap it up with some feedback here. How did you feel about that, Rachel, about your coaching session?
I felt like I really appreciated your input and feedback because I did get a little lost, and it was really great to be able to reach out and get some grounding as I went through this. And I really appreciate Carrie's vulnerability and stepping up and sharing. And for me, it felt good. I felt, I have more, need to do more practice. But it was good.
Yeah. Okay, good. And Carrie, do you have feedback for Rachel as her client? How was that for you?
I thought she did very well. I could feel my own resistance and slipperiness.
And you're observing
I was observing, yes.
Yeah.
So I apologize. I wasn't trying to do that intentionally, but.
Don't apologize because this is really good practice. You're going to have clients who are slippery, who are resistant, and it's not good if you guys want to come and be the perfect client who's not any of that because you're actually really doing a disservice by not being who you are. So I don't want you to apologize for that.
But no, I think she did a good job persisting.
Okay, good. All right. Was there anything in particular? Was it helpful for her to kind of hone in on the house and what that meant? That, you know, when Rachel said, I think that's a symbol, when she put out that hunch, that the house is a symbol of everything ending?
Yes. And in that specific example, it's like something that I already know, sort of, but
in your head.
Hear somebody else say it is helpful.
Yeah. So that was I thought that was, Rachel, just a really good mom response that you had to that, because I think for sure two things were you picked up on her resistance and you knew that the house was really a metaphor for, you know, this grief that she was maybe starting to feel, or maybe resisting, or maybe distracting yourself with, you know, the nitty gritty of the divorce, which is really very easy to do. So I think that you're very intuitive. Again, I love that you started out with, can you give me an example? You asked some really good questions. What's so uncomfortable about waiting? What's the most unsettling thing? And you kept coming back to that, and you did it in a very natural, organic way. Like you weren't like saying word for word. You just like knew it, and you repeated that back to her. You said, what's that has the most juice for you? And so I thought you did a really great job, like, you know, with, helping Carrie. And yeah, she was definitely slippery and there definitely was resistance, and that can be really, really challenging. So now you guys, that was such a great teaching opportunity, because sometimes when you have clients and you start to hone in on what their painful thought is, and there's that resistance there, there's the backtracking, you can just simply go in there and say, what is it that you want to feel? And I did a version of that. She was more specific, mm-hmm. So I just said, do you want to survive or do you want to feel more secure? So I used her words. But if your client didn't say that, you could say in the circumstance, what it is, what do you want to feel as you proceed through this divorce?
Mm-hmm.
And yes. Have them identify.
Yes.
Right. And she might have said, well, I want to feel more at peace. Okay, great. Good to know. Well, it sounds like some of these lizard fears, these reptilian fears that are kind of operating underneath the surface aren't really contributing to a sense of peace. And I think it might be worth looking at them, even if they might not come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, I know that was a really big turnaround, or a point where I was kind of looping. And then that the goal led me out of the loop?
Right. Yeah, it definitely did, right? Because you saw that kind of getting a little repetitive there, or this kind of, you know, little dance there, right? Well, I'll give it to you, but I don't really want to look at it, right? And then what do? And then that's a good idea to, you know, just put it back on the client. What is it that you want? What is it you want to feel? What results do you want? But I like keeping it on a feeling level, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is everyone's motivation for wanting the results they want in their life, is they want to feel better.
Yeah.
And so if they want a certain result, it's usually because it usually goes back to that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So, good job. Great job. A lot of learning today. I apologize for going over. So thank you, everybody, for hanging in there. Are there any burning questions before I say goodbye?
I just wanted to say thank you, and if Carrie wants to continue, I would love to continue. So, just putting that out there.
Okay. Well, you guys can maybe connect offline if you want to. Awesome. Anybody else?
Sure. That sounds good.
Okay.
That was so helpful. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Who's that? Kathy?
Nope, that was Laurie.
Laurie, okay. Thank you. Good. I'm glad there was some learning that took place. Okay, keep practicing. And do we have class next week or the week after?
I think it's next week.
I believe next week.
Yeah, so for those of you who haven't coached or haven't been the client or haven't or want to coach or want to be the client, it would be great if you could post on the forum, and that way we can save a lot of time with, well, I don't know, and maybe, and whatever. All right, you guys, have a great week and great job today, and keep on practicing. Practice makes permanent. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Jessie.
Thank you.
Bye, you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.